the first warrior said. It was a woman's voice. I held my breath. If either of them happened to glance over in my direction as the lightning struck, they would easily see me.
I'll take the east ledge and look for a body.
There won't be one, the woman sighed. She is crafty. The storm was bad luck for us. I thought we had her captured.
We will search until we find her, dead or alive. She will wish she was dead.
The man's voice made me shiver, and I tried to wiggle deeper into the roots of the tree. Then a contraction hammered into me again. I will signal for the search to begin from this point, the woman said, and she raised her hand into the air. I knew what she intended to do before the fire leapt into the air like a red comet, but there was no way I could move. It was taking every ounce of willpower my broken body could muster to keep from screaming out in pain. Perhaps the dead gods were smiling on me, but for whatever reason, the two armored warriors focused their attention up at the rising flare instead of looking at the surrounding forest. Once the fire exploded above, they parted ways and disappeared into the blackness of the stormy night.
Just wait, damn it all!
I seethed to the child in my belly when a contraction started again.
Damn.
It just fucking hurt so badly. I could not move my legs or hips during the wave of pain. They were growing closer, which must have meant I was close to my time, but how long did I have? I should have paid attention to the accounts of childbirth the women of my tribe seemed so obsessed with telling instead of tuning out their words and judging their recollections of pain exaggerated. I forced myself to crawl again for a few more feet before I realized that my knee was healed. Then I recalled a bit of esoteric wisdom that swam to the surface of my mind like a goldfish coming to the surface of a pond. I almost moaned again, and I wondered if the situation could get any more hopeless. I could not use the world when giving birth. I knew this. All elvens knew this. Our bodies healed too quickly with the magic, and my bones needed to part so the child could pass out of my womb. It wouldn't have been much of an issue or complication if I was surrounded by the birthing women in the tribal nest. There would have been a warm fire, warm drinks, and warm massages with warm oil to comfort and soothe me. I could have ignored my magic and let the offspring come out of my body with little fuss. I could not ignore the world at the moment. It was too cold, and I would freeze to death in a few minutes without the world to keep me warm. I needed a fire and someplace warm to nest. The canyon wall was my best bet. If there was any sort of cave concealed there, I had to find it soon, or the baby in my womb would be crushed against my own healing bones or die along with me of hypothermia. Pain laced through my stomach and back again. I couldn't keep from moaning this time, but the rain also seemed to feel my agony and increased in its ferocity, muting my cries. When the pain passed, I forced myself up to my feet and walked, hunched over, through the forest toward the canyon. 34 seconds. A contraction hit me again, and I leaned against one of the nearby trees. Pine, dirt, and rain scents filled the air, and I congratulated myself on not vocalizing my agony this time. I guess that I was halfway to the canyon wall, but it was hard to tell in the darkness and distortion of the unrelenting rain. I expected to come face to face with one of Malek's armored warriors behind each tree, but they had either moved on farther down the river or were still searching the area around where I first fell. Finally, I made it to the canyon after two more piercing contractions, with 30-second intervals between them. The canyon wall extended the length of the river as far as I could see in the darkness, and rain seemed to seep out of the smooth, rocky face like it was crying. I didn't see any caves or even a tiny nook that I could use as shelter, so I followed the cliff face for a few dozen more feet. Another bout of pain laced through my back and hips. This one was worse. It drove me to my knees, and I could not stifle my screams. The pain did not let up, and I twitched on the ground for what felt like 2 minutes. Intense pressure accompanied the pain, and I knew in some deep, feral part of my mind what this meant. The baby needed to come out. Now. Lightning flashed, and I gasped with joy. High on the cliff face was an outcropping of hanging trees concealing a cave. Thunder smashed into the air angrily, and the ferocity of the sound urged me to begin my climb. I waded through another pain before I began my climb. The pressure was building, and I felt overwhelmed with the need to push the baby out here and now, but I held it in
and breathed through the urgency. The trees were 80 feet above me, and the water made every hand and foothold treacherous. If not for the rain, the child, and the labor, I could have made the climb in seconds. As it was, this ascent was impossible. Except there were no other options. I climbed. I stopped every few seconds to ride through a wave of pain and pressure, grasping the rock face and closing my eyes to the rain that lashed my hair against me like thousands of stinging whips. The climb was agonizingly slow, and my heart pounded with the effort and the fear of being spotted. I finally reached my destination and pulled myself up into the outcropping. It was a cave, a deep one at that, and I knew I would be safe from the eyes of the Obarni as long as they did not think to investigate this section of the canyon. I almost laughed with joy. But then I took 3 painful steps into the cave and stopped. The scent was wrong. A creature lived in here, and it only took me a moment to realize what it was. A carrion beast. The odor was fresh. It was still in here. I had no weapons, just my magic and a belly full of life the creature would rob me of quicker than the Obarni. I had killed many of the monsters in my past, and while I always avoided their razor-sharp teeth, deadly claws, and poisonous quills, I never had more at risk than my own life, and I had always carried a few spears with me. There was no other choice. I needed to kill the beast. I walked back into the depths of the cave, reminded of my meeting with the dragons. I had been terrified then, but I believed there was no other way to save my people. Now I knew that had been folly. Perhaps she had planned the meeting. Maybe she had even planted the stones Nyarathi and I found in the ruins. The creature was cunning, and if not for the fact that Kyair had somehow managed to kill her family, The beast growled in the darkness ahead. I risked a flame to my hand, and the size of the cave was revealed with its orange light. The cave traveled back about 60 yards at a slight upward slope. At the back of the cavern lay a pile of bones, travel packs, skulls, and a massive carrion beast. The largest one I had ever seen was about half the size of a horse, but this particular specimen dwarfed that easily. It hissed as my light appeared, and the creature's tail darted up into the air like a scorpion. The barbed quills on the end turned to face me, and I crouched low to prepare to spring to either side to dodge them. Then a contraction came again. I tried not to scream, but I could not contain my agony. The massive beast hissed again, and it sprang to its feet in a liquid movement. I fell to my knees, and the fire in my hand flickered and almost died. The baby's head was pushing into my cervix with so much pressure I could not focus on the flame anymore. The carrion beast growled menacingly at me, and I looked up at the creature. "Get the fuck out or shut the fuck up!" I screamed at the giant monster. Its tail began to quiver, and I grasped onto the world through the intense pain spreading through my body. "I will gut you and wear your fur like a coat! Get out or stay down!" The carrion beast had cat-like violet eyes, and they opened a little wider at my words. "You heard me!" I screamed again at the animal, and then growled through an agonizing bout of pain. "Lie down, or I'll kill you right now!" I stared at the creature, and it looked back at me. Our eyes met over the flame in my palm, and I debated killing it 100 times as the agony pushed against my spine like a red-hot fire poker. Finally, the carrion beast blinked its large eyes and lowered its tail. It circled its bed a few times, looked back at me, lay down, and rested its feline head on the top of its oversized clawed feet. I tore off my pants and threw them on the ground. Then I did the same with my soaked undergarments and tunic. I could smell the blood and oils of my amniotic fluid, and I looked back at the carrion beast to see if the creature had decided to make a move. Its violet eyes were halfway opened, and it studied me lazily. The pain came again, and I forced myself to let go of the world. It was an odd sensation. My magic was such a part of my mind and body that it almost felt as if I had suddenly lost one of my limbs. The pain hit me full force in the hips, spine, and back. Now that there was no power to dull it, I felt tears stream down my face with the same force as the rain beating down outside the cave. The child in my womb seemed to understand that it was safe to escape now, and it made rhythmic movements against the inside of my abdomen. I panted through the pain and waited for the surge to return. It would all end soon. With the magic out of my system, my bones could bend enough to allow the baby to come out. I felt the urge to push and did, straining with every ounce of strength in my body through the contraction that shot pain through my body. I could feel the baby's head so low, so close to emerging, but as I stopped pushing to rest and catch my breath, the head retreated back a bit. I groaned in frustration. All the effort had done little to move it. The surge of tension returned, and I squatted down and pushed harder, so hard I felt my eyeballs would burst from my face. My skin reddened, and I could not breathe. The pressure was enormous. It felt like the baby was the size of the carrion beast. I had to stop to take a breath and prepare to push again. I reached between my legs and felt gingerly for the child's head and found it there, a small, surprisingly soft, wet lump. I tried not to feel discouraged at how much farther it needed to go to be born and braced myself for another contraction. I pushed again as hard as I could, gritting my teeth and moaning so loud I was certain the O'Barney could hear me through the storm. I continued to push and felt the head descending farther. It was so close. I took another deep breath and screamed as I gave a final momentous push and felt the odd, slippery sensation of the little creature's yielding skulls sliding into my hands. I pulled the rest of its body out of mine, then I sat back and laughed in relief as I cradled the puckered little thing to my chest. It was wet and white and wrinkled. It did not cry, yet its face scrunched up in an angry protest to the harsh interruption of birth. I looked with fascination at the thick, pulsing cord that still connected the child to myself. I felt some mild contractions and gently pushed the placenta out with relative ease. The pain faded, replaced by a wondrous echo of pleasure. Lightning hit the hallway of the cave in a series of three thunderous crashes. By the dead gods, you fucking hurt me. The baby was wetter than I expected, and I cradled it against my bare chest to keep it warm. The fire from my hand had long since gone out. I risked a small glow from my palms so that I could get a better look at what Kyaer and I had created. It was wrinkly, hairless, and completely unattractive. Then she opened her eyes. They were green, just like his. They seemed to glow brighter than the fire in my hand. There was intelligence and recognition in her eyes. She knew me, and I knew her. She looked at me with pure love. It struck me so hard that I felt my chest heave and tears return to my eyes. This little creature had never spoken a word to me, but perhaps it knew me better than I knew myself. She understood I would do anything to protect her. Hello, Vyarathi, daughter of the storm. Her eyes closed and then opened again. I pulled the world back into my body and felt the surge of warmth come from Vyarathi. Did she know how to use the magic already? That should have been impossible. But she was a single born of a single born. O'Barney and Elvin. Who knew what power she might possess? The dragons knew. I debated leaving the cave with my precious child, but I knew this was the safest place within several miles. The carrion beast still watched me, but I knew that the creature and I had an understanding. It was female, and had been a mother as well. I had nothing to fear while I stayed here. The baby made a gasping sound, and I pulled her to my breast. The pain had subsided, but the exhaustion would not leave my body without rest. Vyarathi sucked lazily for a few moments, but then she nodded her head and fell into a deep sleep. I shortly joined her.
Chapter 37 The O'Barney. What happened? Malik's voice was halfway between a scream and a question. I killed her. I choked out the words and pushed my face into my shaking palms. The tears that came down my cheeks felt cold. What the fuck are you talking about? What did you do? His armored hands grabbed me by the shoulders and shook me violently. The scent of Schlara's charred body drifted to my nose, and I wanted to vomit. It felt like a dream, a nightmare. This could not be happening. What had I done? I killed Schlara. I chose Iola Rothi over my best friend. I chose the elven who enslaved me, who murdered humans with as much care as I swatted at flies, who led an army against my kin and sent dragons to butcher thousands of my soldiers. I chose the woman who killed my father and brother over the woman who adored me above all else. What kind of monster was I? No. No, no. He let go of my bare shoulders and ran over to the smoldering corpse 20 feet to my side. My eyes followed him, but the image blurred through my tears. Iola Rothi was gone, and the feeling of our lovemaking was now eclipsed by my self-loathing. How? Why? He shrieked. He pulled off his wolf helmet with a frantic yank. I don't know. I whispered the words, but I knew he heard me. You don't know. You don't know. You just murdered her, and you have no reason? Tears streamed down his face. The four warriors accompanying him shifted in their seats nervously. I was grateful that their matching wolf helmets all covered their faces. I did not want to face their disgust. This makes no sense. His voice was full of despair. He fell to his armored knees and reached out hesitantly over the smoking figure. Kyair, tears streamed down his face. I kneeled in silence while he sobbed over Schlara's corpse, and I fought with the knots of agony in the pit of my stomach. Finally, he turned to look over at me, and the rage was plain on his face. He sprung to his feet and moved to face me. Something happened. You better fucking tell me now, Kyair. He pointed a gloved finger down at my face. I killed her. I was suddenly aware that I was naked, and the scent of Iola Rothi clung to my body like perfume. I wondered why Malik had not commented on my lack of armor. Liar! I don't believe you! His jaw clenched, and his eyes went wide with insanity. I said nothing, and he began to tremble in his armor. I was divided in my own mind. The pain of Schlara's loss and the horror of what I had done tied my tongue and kept me from explaining what had happened. Another part of my consciousness wanted to buy as much time as possible for Iola Rothi to escape. His fist lashed out, and though it moved slowly, I didn't bother to block it. My head snapped sideways, and my face numbed with shock. He pulled back his arm again to strike. "You are hiding something from me," he seethed. I sprung to my feet, and my friend took a startled step backward. The rage in his eyes briefly flashed to fear, but he stood his ground and stepped back toward me. Our faces were close enough so that our noses almost touched, and I could smell the anger on his spittle. "Tell your guards to leave," I commanded. The armored warriors upon their horses behind him turned to look at each other. When Malik didn't say anything for a few seconds, the one at the end turned his horse around slowly. "Why? So you can kill me as well?" The guard who had turned whirled back toward us, though it was clear none of them wanted to be here. "No, I want to speak with you about it privately. Tell me what happened. Now." His fists fell to his side, and one of the hands brushed the handle of his sword. "We argued. She attacked. I didn't mean to kill her. The half-truths skipped from my mouth like stones across a lake." "What did you argue about?" he growled. He looked past me and must have noticed my discarded armor, shield, and mace scattered on the grass. "It doesn't matter." "It does if you killed her. Fuck! Stop with your lies!" His teeth ground together, and I felt the power of the earth surge through his armored body. "I just did not love her enough, Malik. not the way she wanted. I whispered the words. Each syllable tore through my throat. I finally made her understand. No, you loved her. The tears streamed down his face. Just tell me what happened, Kaer. He sobbed the words. We finally won. Our people are free, and now the woman I love is dead. By your hands? He kneeled before me and grasped my wrists. Why did you do this? I pulled my hands away from his grip and took a deep breath in an effort to steady my nerves. A plan was beginning to form in my mind. There were only three possible outcomes. I would die here, I would be captured, or I could escape and continue on my path to meet with Iola Rothi as we planned. How could I ensure the last result without killing anyone else? I am going to put my armor back on. I regretted the words when they left my mouth, but I knew Malik would understand what I was doing as soon as I touched the skull-emblazoned metal. Why was it off? How are you even alive? I saw you fall from the dragon. Shlara told me she was going to recover your body. We thought you died. I hoped that my friend was too distraught to figure out why I was putting on my armor. I didn't answer him. Instead, I grabbed my blood-crusted undergarments and slipped into them. I didn't know how I had survived the fall from the dragon, but perhaps I shouldn't have. Then Shlara would still be alive. I grasped my leather shirt piece and shrugged it over my shoulders with practiced ease. Then Malik punched me. Perhaps I should have expected the blow. Maybe I wanted him to hit me. The fist caught me on the left eye and knocked me spinning through the air with the force of a horse's hoof. I landed on the ground, next to my discarded armor, and it took a few seconds for my brain to steady the sky. Malik jumped on top of me, but I managed to block the next few strikes of his armored fists. I finally caught one of his arms and managed to trap it next to my neck. Then I lifted my hips with a sharp jerk and threw his body off of mine. Malik was skilled in combat, but he wasn't a match for my prowess. No one but Shlara came close to my level. I soon had our positions reversed. Instead of pummeling him, I just pinned his arms under my hands so that he could not continue to strike me. "Who the fuck is she?" he screamed from beneath me. "What are you talking about? The woman? Was it the elven general?" Foam was coming out of the side of his mouth, and he was doing his best to unhinge his arms from mine. His accusation surprised me, and he managed to free his left hand and punch me in the nose. He didn't have good leverage from beneath me, but the magic of the earth made our attacks powerful, and I felt my skull threaten to crack and my vision swim dangerously. "Stop hitting me!" The sadness over Shlara's murder and the shame of my deed was suddenly replaced by anger. "Tell me I am wrong, Kaer. Tell me you didn't fuck that elven bitch and then kill Shlara when she found you two. I am not a fool." Now both of his hands were free, and I let him push me off of his chest. "Nothing to say? Just tell me, damn it all." He pointed at me again, but I couldn't say the words to defend myself. The four warriors on the horses had their hands on their swords, and I wondered how serious of a threat they would think I was. I knew they were more loyal to Malik than they were to me. "I am so sorry, my friend." I lowered my head. "I'm not your fucking friend, Kaer," he growled. "I will find out what happened here, even if I have to torture it from you." He gestured to the last man on the line of horses. "Elantic, go gather a scout party immediately and bring them here. There are horse tracks beside the corpse leading north. Ren, Guaito, and Fredic, help me bind Kaer." "Stop!" Elantic obeyed my command by halting his steed. The other three men also paused in their act of dismounting their horses. "I will come peacefully. There is no need to track the horses. The animals fled the pasture when I killed Shlara." "No, Kaer. Shlara's horse would not have left her. Who took it?" I couldn't hide my grimace. I had let my emotions interfere with my logic. Of course, Malik could see through the lie. I did it. I will come peacefully if you give up the pursuit. I did not know how else to bargain with him. I had to let Iola Rothi put some distance between herself and my troops. They would easily overpower her now. You are not in a position to negotiate with me, he sneered. Take him. He drew his sword, and the three men dismounted. Ilantic kicked his horse forward, and they headed after Iola Rothi. The horse and his rider burst into a torrent of flame. The fire roared purple and green. It was molten magma that instantly consumed the screaming beast and man. The three other men jumped to the side to avoid being scorched, but the sticky flames spread. The nearest horse was soon engulfed. It stamped and screeched as it roasted alive. I had only intended to kill Ilantic's horse. My magic was imprecise and powerful. I did not want to hurt any of them, but I could not let them hunt Iola Rothi. I had made my choice. You fucking bastard! Malik's sword cut at me horizontally, but my shield was suddenly in my hands, and his blade bounced off it with a deafening ring. He did not expect the block, and his eyes went wide with surprise. I stepped toward him and slammed the flat surface of the skulls into his unarmored face and torso. The blow did not break his jaw, but there was enough force to knock him off of his feet. The first two warriors came at me with a combined attack. They were both right-handed, and their heavy horse sabers were designed to slash downward from a mounted position. They expected me to fall back and away from their attacks. Instead, I stepped forward, slamming my shield against the man to my right, and then intercepting the attack of his partner with a palm strike to his shoulder. My blow altered the direction of his swing, and the weapon swiped harmlessly in front of me, almost striking the other warrior. My left foot lashed out and connected with the warrior to my left. My shin collided with the mailed part of his knee joint, and I heard the bone snap with a dreadful wet sound. The man did not scream out against the pain, but he lost his footing and began to fall toward me. He was more concerned with keeping his balance than attacking me again, so I brought down my shield against his blade, lifted my left arm against his elbow, and shattered his forearm. His saber spun through the air like a disc, and I snagged the hilt of the weapon before he crashed into the ground at my feet. There was a break in the wolf armor at the neck, and I buried the sword into the warrior's throat before he could push his helmet down to protect the jugular. Then there were only two warriors and Malik. From the corner of my eye, I saw my friend struggle to a crouch while he covered his bleeding face. He would be healed in a few more seconds, and then I would probably face the wrath of his magic or his sword play. I yanked the buried sword out of the dying man's neck and then focused my attention on the last two of his warriors. The man I had pushed away from me drove his blade to my right side, but my newly acquired sword was quick, and the heavy cleaver almost felt like a toy in my hand. I whipped it upward easily, and it caught him in the elbow before the edge of his weapon could cut into my undefended side. The armor parted at my attack, and his blade, along with his hand and forearm, spun free of us in a shower of blood. He was surprised and choked out a brief scream of disappointment before my weapon removed the top half of his armored skull. The last warrior was the most skilled of the three, and he lashed out with a series of precise cuts aimed at my right side. I had to fall back a few feet and adjust my shield to block the majority of the attacks, and I realized that he was herding me away from Malik. My friend had risen to his feet, and fury was clear on his face. He brought up his hands, and I knew what was coming next. Unfortunately, my current attacker had done an excellent job of positioning me at the perfect angle for Malik to aim his magic. I was too far away to sprint toward my general, so I risked throwing my sword at him. The blade twisted through the air and buried itself into his midsection like a dagger through a sausage. The three of us screamed in unison. I had only meant to distract Malik from launching a globe of fire at me, but my attack may have actually severed his spine. My friend collapsed with an agonized look of panic on his face, and the sides of my vision began to grow dark. The soldier paused to assess his general, and I grabbed my mace. He turned back to me just in time to block my attack with his own sword. The saber shrieked when it made contact with my weapon, and the warrior stumbled back before I could land a blow against his body. I drove forward with my shield, and he was forced to retreat against the combined pushes from the bulwark and the devastating swings from my mace. The man had left his shield on his horse and was not able to defend against my attacks without giving up ground. After a few seconds, I timed his footwork and managed to slip my bare toe behind his armored heel. He tumbled down before me, and my mace crushed the wolf helmet with a shower of red blood and brain matter. "Fuck you, Kyair." Malik lay on the grass a few feet from his dead warriors. I dropped my mace and shield, and then walked to him. "Hold still," I commanded. I looked at the position of the blade. It was not coming out of the other side of his back. His armor and his own strength had stopped the weapon from reaching a fatal point in his spine. "Why? You are my best friend. We trusted you." The tears streamed down his face, and blood came out of the side of his mouth. "You will live," I said with a long sigh of relief. It would have been too much to kill Malik and Shlara. A surge of memories rushed through my head, and I recalled the many laughs, arguments, and problems my friend and I had shared over the decades we had worked together building this army. "Why did you kill her? She was wonderful, Kyair. She loved you." He was weeping along with me. "Don't follow me. Don't follow the horse tracks. You are fit to lead our people. Just leave me alone. I am sorry, Malik. I am so sorry." "What do I tell them? That you just killed her?" He grabbed my shoulder, and I realized he was using all of his magic to remain conscious. "Tell them I died," I sighed. "Or tell them what happened. I don't care. Just don't follow me. You have what you wanted now. The Elvens are dead." "No, you fucking bastard. You can't do this to us." I could almost taste his hatred, his sadness. "I am sorry. You betrayed us all. It was not supposed to end like this." I stood and walked toward the group of patient horses. My path took me past my weapons and the armor I had worn for so many years. I would not need them anymore. So I left them on the ground. "You should finish what you started," Malik screamed at me. "Kill me, you asshole. I will never leave you alone. We will hunt you. I will make you pay for killing her. I'll find the elven woman and kill her as well." I mounted the nearest horse and stroked its mane. It was a gray-spotted animal, and it cooed at my touch. For a second, I recalled being the stable boy at Iola Rothi's home. It seemed ridiculous that I was here now. I used to love horses. "Goodbye, Malik," I said to my friend. He was trying to pull the sword out of his spine, but his hands were covered in blood, and he could not gain purchase on the weapon. All it would take is someone to yank the weapon out of him, and my old friend would be healed within a minute. A new torrent of tears came to my eyes, and I desperately wiped them away with my bloody hands. "Fuck you, Kyair," he screamed, but his voice was weak. I turned my horse and rode away toward the east while my friend continued to scream. They would come after me first, so I had to disappear into the wilderness. As soon as I lost all signs of pursuit, I would head north and meet Iola Rothi. Then we could be together forever. even if the sounds of Shlara's dying scream and Malik's curses haunted me for the rest of my life. Chapter 38. Kyair. "You awake, Kyair?" the voice called from outside my tent. "Ugh." I rolled over on my mat and tried to wipe the horrible memory from my mind by rubbing my eyes. "I'll take that as a yes," Yillamar said as he entered the tent with two plates of breakfast food. I was surprised at his appearance, as Virnine had been responsible for delivering my food for the past 5 days. "What is this?" I asked the obvious question. "Breakfast. Will you eat with me?" His mouth twisted into a crooked smile. "Do I have a choice?" I sat up and fought against the sounds of Malik's voice screaming in my memory. "As my empress often says, there are always choices. But I am guessing that you are probably bored with being alone in your tent all day." He set one of the plates of food in front of me and then sat. He carried a large earthenware jug. I had not noticed it at first because it was concealed in the nook of his over-muscled arms. I nodded and realized that I might be able to get some information from the red-haired general. Virnine had been tight-lipped since Talaxthe's warriors had saved her, and my ex-lover did not speak to me other than to ask if I needed more food or water. It had been a boring 4 days. The big elven took a massive forkful of food into his mouth. I studied him for a few more seconds, and then started on my own food. It was better than the fare Virnine had been delivering me. The cut peppers were stuffed with a smoky cheese and pork. The taste combined with the soft scrambled eggs to deliver a wonderful sensation to the front of my tongue. We ate in silence for a few minutes. He set his fork down and placed his hands on his knees. Our eyes met, and I raised an eyebrow to prompt him to speak. "I disagree with my empress," he began. "About?" I asked. "If it was my choice, I would keep you on this world. I'd have you close the radicals, and I would try to form a truce with you." He nodded at his own words, and I felt my mouth drop in surprise. "I am confused," I said after a few seconds. "I doubt the human queen will be able to learn the magic quickly enough. We'll have to fight the Obarni when they begin to come through. In some ways, I am eager for the challenge, but I would prefer not to risk the world we have fought so long to obtain." He punctuated his sentence with another bite of eggs. "Does your empress know you feel this way?" I wondered why the Red Hatchet was bothering to tell me these things. "Yes, we've spoken about it at length, as have Disanti and Fehalda." "What do they think?" "I'm sure you can guess." He took another forkful of food, and I realized he wanted me to make a prediction. "Disanti wants me to stay, and Fehalda wants me gone." "Huh, you are partially correct. Both agree with me." He finished his plate and then took a large swallow of the liquid in the jug. After he was done, he passed it to me and I drank. It was refreshingly cool water. "I find that hard to believe. Fehalda hates me." I set the water jug down on the floor. "Maybe. But she claimed you saved her and Virnine from some sort of monsters at the foothills of the Teeth Mountains. The White Flame would rather have you as our ally than the rest of the Obarni barking up our tree." "Why are you telling me this?" I asked. The sun was higher up in the sky now, and my tent was uncomfortably warm. I guessed we were probably close to the border of Brilla, and the climate, while not as tropical as Van Lorn, was still much warmer than Naya. "I wanted to apologize." The crooked smile left his face. "For what?" Sweat was beginning to drip down my back, and I took another sip of the water. "I was rude to you when we first met. I almost spat the water out on the big elven. Are you fucking with me? I asked. No. I was ruder to you. I laughed slightly and finished another swig of the water. It was only a quarter full now, and I set it down. I'm not very good at politics. That is the realm of my empress and Alatoricht. Much like Fehalda, I prefer the fight. I thought you were just an O'Barney, sent to hamper our settlement of this world. Then I believed you a pretender. As soon as we fought each other, I realized I was mistaken. You intended to kill me in that battle. Islata had told me of the Empress's plan before the fight. Even then, the elven woman did not believe I was their destroyer. Yes, do you blame me? My Empress knew what it would mean if Caneth took you back before the Council. It was horrible timing for him to arrive when he did. He grabbed the jug from the floor and finished the rest of the water. So you only wish to apologize? Do you accept? He asked. I searched his red eyes and his sharp, chiseled face. I did not know what would come if I refused to accept. I guessed the elven general would leave, and I would not find out exactly what he wanted. Yes, I accept your apology. Thank you. Now I have a request. I guessed as much. We are camped next to the Radical. We were unable to change my Empress's mind, and she will banish you from this world shortly. I sighed at his words and nodded. I didn't know what I expected to happen, since Ternia's people were massacred. Talaxthe's reversal of fortune had completely surprised me, and her army of thousands of elvens meant that there was no way I could escape from their clutches. My only real plan, once I reached the other world, was to obtain an ovule and return as soon as I could. At least I would not have to escape from the O'Barney Council, as long as I returned before Talaxthe taught Jesme how to close the Radicals. I would be able to return and find out if Nadia knew anything more about my daughter. The probabilities were low that I would be successful, but I had succeeded against worse odds. So what is your request? I've never lost in combat since I won the O'Barney Games. I thought I was even stronger than Caneth. Fehalda could beat me with the use of her magic, and I never had the opportunity to spar with Islata, but I felt confident that I had reached the pinnacle of my abilities. The big elven sighed and ran his left hand through his mane of hair. Then I fought you. And it pains me to admit that you defeated me easily. After I awoke, I realized that I had much more to learn. Perhaps that is another reason I want you to stay. You want me to teach you? Every hour is precious now. We need to get back to Naya so that my Empress can continue working with the Human Queen. She was angry at me when I lost to you, but now that she, all of us, realize your identity, it would be a shame to exile you from this world without using some of your knowledge to make us stronger. Then it seems to me that you should be able to convince Talaxthe that I need to stay here. This was a surprising turn of events, and I realized that I should have thought of this angle when bargaining with the Empress earlier. She wanted a single-born offspring from me, but training for her warriors might have been more useful. Even if the idea of training the elven people to fight my own made my stomach churn, I wanted to stay on this world until I learned of Nadia's connection with Iola Rothi and my daughter. We have tried, Kyair. He frowned and shook his head. Even Disanti was unable to convince her. I am sorry, but there is no changing her mind. What if I agreed to her terms? I asked with a sigh. I had already asked Virnine about this possibility, and she said that the Empress was no longer willing to entertain the idea. It has already been asked and refused. She is stubborn, I rubbed my eyes again with my hands. Malik's voice was echoing in my head again. Warrior to warrior, will you work with me for a few hours until we reach the radical? He placed his palms flat on the dirt ground of my small tent and bowed his head slightly. I considered his request for a few seconds before I answered. I respected him for apologizing and being willing to admit he needed to improve and that he had something to learn from me. Though I had little to gain from teaching him, and I was not thrilled with the idea of spending what were potentially my last few hours on this planet sparring with an elven I did not even like. But an extra hour or two might delay the Empress in sending me back, and perhaps it would earn me a few small stones of favor with the woman. Maybe she would change her mind at the last second and allow me to stay. The worst that could happen would be that the elven would become a better warrior. But I felt no loyalty to any side anymore. O'Barney, elven, human, I did not care, as long as Jesme, Nadia, and my other friends were safe. Fine, I will teach you what I can in the time that the Empress gives us. Thank you. Come with me. He stood from his spot on the floor, and I followed the red-haired elven out of my prison tent. The campsite was busy with the activity of the small army. The warriors wore red or black armor, and they glanced at me tepidly as the red hatchet led me through the camp. We came to a circle of grass, ringed in felled tree trunks. The land bordering Brilla was composed of green sloping hills, blanketed in long grasses, ferns, palm trees, and groves of copperwood. Yulimar told an elven woman to fetch us some flagons of water, and to ask Fehalda to join us. The white flame asked if she could watch you beat the shit out of me again. Is that agreeable? I nodded and tried not to hide the surprise at how polite the big elven was acting toward me. Excellent. Can you show me your stance again? Was it like this? He attempted to copy my battle stance, but his position was incorrect. I adjusted the placement of his front leg, the height of his arms, and the bladed angle of his body. The face is the most important body part to protect in combat. I had instructed hundreds, maybe thousands of warriors in all forms of combat, and the critiques to his stance came easily to my lips. If your hands are up like this, you won't be able to deliver a roundhouse punch, but it doesn't much matter. I flowed into the stance and demonstrated palm strikes from the relaxed position of my hands held above my eye level. Gravity will assist with the power, and your strong side is forward. I pointed down to my left leg and his right. So you have the most power with the quickest strike that has the longest range. If I get a hit in with my right hand, I am happy, but I'm only using it to confuse my opponent's defense. I really want to connect with my left palm on the enemy's face. Your turn. I held my hands up and blocked the large elven's quick strikes to my face. That is correct. While your hands are up, you can attack and also defend easily. I threw a few of my own punches toward the elven's face, and he blocked them. If my punches are lower, you can drop a quick elbow and block them as well. I attacked him in the chest and stomach. The big man was swift and managed to drop his elbow and stop my fist from penetrating his defense. Just choose your defense carefully. When I fight someone who mirrors my stance, I have to feint my attacks. Even if your arms are raised in the correct position, you will block the quickest attacks. I increased the speed of my punches at Yulimar's face, and a few slipped past his blocking hands, though they still did not connect with his nose because I was too far from his face. Once I mix up the attacks to your body, you will be tempted to block them all. I varied my punches toward his stomach again, and he had to drop his elbows slightly to keep them from hitting his body. But then you leave your face open, and a clever attacker could take advantage of the break in your defense. I told him what I was going to do, but my palm still struck him in the nose with a wet sound that brought the memory of Malik's confrontation to my mind again. The blow had not been executed with full force, but Yillamar fell back away from my strikes so that he could regain his composure. Getting hit in the face was a terrible feeling, especially when the nose broke, and it took a hardened warrior to shrug off the damage without temporarily losing their vision or defense. So most of your defensive effort should be focused on your face. I stopped attacking and stepped away from him. The big elven nodded, and the river of blood coming down from his nose dribbled onto his red tunic. He raised a hand, and then blew out a fat glob of blood to the side of the circle. Then the big elven adjusted his nose with a few loud cracks of cartilage. "I'll press and attack. Don't let me hit your head." He nodded, and we took up mirrored positions. I remembered that when we first fought, he had jested that my hands in the air made it seem like I was afraid. It was ironic that he was now a student of the technique. But it was more ironic that I was his instructor. I varied my attacks between his face and body again. The big elven did an excellent job of keeping his head defended. A few of my strikes sneaked past his lower defense and smashed into his stomach and ribs. Yillamar's torso might as well have been carved out of rock, though. My attacks did little damage to him, even if their impact sounded like planks of wood being clapped together. My strikes grew harder, and I could see him struggle to fight through the pain I was inflicting on his stomach. I wasn't hitting him with my full strength, but I guessed the battle would not have been different if I had instructed him to hit me back. After 5 minutes of punishment, I stopped. Good. A crowd of elvens had gathered to watch, occupying every spot on the logs circling the field. More were standing behind the seated spectators. Fehalda commanded a prime seat, flanked by 20 of her warriors. "Let's break and have some water." I nodded at Yillamar's suggestion, and two elvens wearing red armor handed each of us a clay jug of cool refreshment. The big elven had been working hard to tolerate the pain and defend himself, and was covered with a thick layer of sweat. Though my strikes required more exertion than parrying, I was not even warmed up yet. "You can attack me back now. Let's leave kicks out for the moment. Just focus on downward palm strikes from your defending position." I guessed a half hour had passed, and I doubted that we would be able to get to any more advanced strategies in the time that remained. Looking forward to it, Yillamar smiled and raised his hands to the position I had taught him. He darted forward quickly and pounded down with a flurry of sequenced palm strikes. He was fast for an elven and very strong, but the enemies in my memory were much more capable, and I had little difficulty defeating them by the half dozen. I trained with the best warriors of my army, and their skill, strength, and speed made the red hatchet seem like a child in comparison. He did have talent, and I knew that if we were able to spend a few months together, I could have trained him well enough to stand against most of my O'Barney soldiers. I had judged him a fool when we first met, but the man was learning from my training and his mistakes. When it was appropriate, I offered him pointers about his technique and reinforced the positioning I taught him earlier. I coached him through the pain that my counterattacks left on his opened defenses. Another half hour of sparring left him covered in bruises and bleeding from gashes that my blows had inflicted upon his face. "You are improving quickly," I nodded and motioned for the woman with the jug of water to bring it to me. Her hair was a dark gold, and her eyes an amethyst hue that contrasted sharply with her red armor. "Thank you," the big elven said. "You don't seem to be working very hard." He was panting between the words and reached up the hand not holding the jug to wipe some of the blood away from his mouth before he drank. "It has been many lifetimes since I've trained one-on-one. It is too bad I will be leaving shortly." I shrugged my shoulders, drank deeply from the jug, and handed it back to the woman. "Yes, it is. Can you instruct me on kicks?" There were probably 200 warriors observing our session now, and the air was dead silent. It was a little unnerving to be watched by so many elvens, but I knew each extra minute of training I gave to Yulimar might swing the Empress to change her mind on my exile. "Show me your techniques," I instructed the red-haired elven. He nodded and displayed a variety of his leg attacks. "Don't kick above waist level," I commented after he showed me a few of his shin, side, and front kicks. "They are too risky for combat and too easy for an opponent to counter." I pointed out a few other tiny flaws with his supporting foot position and the way he moved his hands when he kicked. His technique was already very polished, but the few suggestions would make him more powerful if he continued to practice them. "Let's spar now. Kicks and strikes. Hit me back." He nodded, and we spent the next chunk of time battling in the circle while the elven army watched. I had expected Yulimar to be a quick study, and I was not disappointed. If I could have spent a year with the man, he might have eventually rivaled Malik or Gorbani in combat. Yulimar stopped our match with a wave of his hand and gestured with his head toward the perimeter of the circle. The crowd of elven warriors had parted, and four green-armored warriors walked into the field with Virnine at their point. "It is time." Her ruby eyes met mine, and I thought I perceived some sadness in them. "Very well. Thank you, Kyair." Yulimar nodded to me, and I returned the gesture. I beckoned to the woman carrying my water jug, and she passed me the container. The liquid was still cool, and I drank it while Virnine's warriors circled me. The Radical is located an hour's walk from us, at the base of the canyon that forms the border between Naya and Brilla, Virnine informed me as we walked. For half a second, I thought perhaps she and her four armored warriors were to be my only guards, but then I realized that the entire group of elvens that had observed Yulimar and I fighting were accompanying us as well. "Looks like you aren't taking any chances," I smirked. "No." Fehalda had floated into the ring of the Empress's guards and moved to walk beside me. I turned my head and saw that Yulimar was a few hundred yards behind, conversing with a group of his warriors. "Was Yulimar correct?" I asked the two women. I remembered carrying their barely conscious bodies away from the switchbacks of Nadia's keep so that I could use the power of the water to heal the injuries the spider-lizard monsters had inflicted upon them. "About?" Fehalda asked, with a white raised eyebrow. "She said you and Disanti asked the Empress to let me stay on this world." "Does it matter?" Fehalda didn't bother to look at me. "I suppose it doesn't. Perhaps I just wish to understand why you changed your mind about me." "We have faced nothing but bad luck since crossing paths with you. But now that Ternia is dead, the rest of the clans will soon find out that something is amiss on our world. Even if the other clans do not come here, the rest of the Two Bears will search for their leaders. These people are your enemies as well as ours," Fehalda explained. She did not make eye contact with me. I could see Virnine looking at me out of the corner of her eye, and I wondered what the woman would say if we were alone. We reached the end of the campsite and continued south for another mile before deviating from the main road to a small path that ran eastward. The path was narrow and looked as if it may have once been a game trail. The trail clung to a creek bed that ran down the side of the gorge. Though there was some shade from giant ferns, palms, and leafy trees, the air was thick with humidity, and the breath of the